Wait a minute. I got a little concerned there for a second. I keep everything in this little bag right here. And so I go to pull everything out because I knew I got little things in here I need for today. And my notebook wasn't there. I usually have about a page of notes. So I hope y'all brought snacks today. I got 7 pages. Don't worry. That's how detailed what I've been studying is. Like 7 times of what I usually bring. So when I was getting ready this morning, I have these little conversations with God, or maybe it's just me talking to myself, but it's just like, what if I change it? Because I studied so much, it's like, what if I change it? I'll be like, I'll roll with it. It'll be all right. I'm not worried. I've been studying this, but if you change it, you'll give me. And when I couldn't find my notes, I was like, you were messing with me. I even looked at my wife and said, somebody messed with me. Where's my notebook? She said, check over there. I do not know how it got out. Grandchildren, it just came to me. Grandchildren came to me. So I still need just a second. That will mess with you when you're getting ready to give or deliver what you think you had, and it went away, and I'm like, okay, Lord, what are you going to say? So I will give you guys a special prayer request instead. How about that? Y'all need to pray for Nick Saban and his peace. And I'll say it's a good thing he's got Aflac, because those Tigers didn't just secure their place. They rolled the tide on out. You're welcome. I'm ready to preach now. I'm excited in church. I'm excited out of church. I had rode them off this year. But I wasn't the fan I needed to be. Daniel chapter 1, 2, 3, Ephesians chapter 6. Good stuff in Daniel. And it's so in-depth, doesn't get touched on a lot, because it has to do with end times as well. And it actually has to do with very present times. And if you understand the life of Daniel, Daniel lived in 600 B.C. Think about that. Go back. I'm not great in math, but if we're in the year 2024 right now, and go back 600 years, that's somewhere around 2,500 years ago. Is that close enough? A long time ago. How could that 2,500 years ago period be so relevant today? That's an easy answer, because the truth of it is, God is alive. His word is alive. And it goes to the dead places in us and tries to speak life into us if we'll hear it. So we've got something that is very old. So before I start talking about this too much, I want you to understand about Daniel, 600 B.C. before Christ, 2024, where we're at right now. And this is going to be a very relevant topic that we're going to talk about. Daniel, in his prophetic words that God gave him, was so on point that when historians read what Daniel had said, his prophetic utterances were so accurate, like pinpoint accurate. When the historians looked at it and studied it, they said, the dates of Daniel's life had to be wrong. He could not have foretold these things in his life unless he would have lived in those times. In other words, what Daniel recorded was so accurate, they thought that he must be taking notes as like a reporter or like a journalist. All right, I'm sorry. I just threw two terms at you that we have no idea what they are today. Those things died a long time ago. Journalism, reporting, right? So, just so you know. So, what it was they thought Daniel was alive during the time and was walking around and saying, well, this is going to happen as he was watching it happen. Do you understand the confusion that was going on? But the truth of it is, Daniel lived 600 years before that time. And he's been given something so accurate that everybody thought certainly he lived during that time, but he did not live during that time. His eyes were open during that time, and he was exposed to what thus saith the Lord. I want to live that close to the Lord. I want my relationship with him to be so close. I'm sorry. If it's not bothering you, it's bothering me. So let's get into it. And I'm not going to read all the way through. I'm just going to give you enough to highlight what was going on in Daniel 1, 2, and 3. So Daniel chapter 1, let's go with verse 1 through 5, then we'll jump down to 17. So in the third year, and this is wordy. I like it. This is study. This is wordy. This is going to be the Amplified Bible. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with a part of the vessels of the house of God. And he carried them into the land of Shinar, Babylonia, to the house of his God, and placed the vessels in the treasury of his God. And the Babylonian king told Asphanez, the master of his eunuchs, to bring in some of the children of Israel, both of the royal family and of the nobility, youths without blemish, well-favored in appearance, and skillful in all wisdom, discernment, and understanding, apt in learning knowledge, competent to stand and serve in the king's palace, and to teach them the literature and language of the Chaldeans. And the king assigned for them a daily portion of his own rich and dainty food and of the wine which he drank. They were to be so educated and so nourished for 3 years that at the end of that time they might stand before the king. So it goes on to tell us that Nebuchadnezzar, he had a lot of staff. He had a lot of people. He had a lot of wise men around him, and they used enchantments. They used all kinds of different things to divine, to come up with ideas, to think of things, and not to just be noble, but to sound noble and put on the act. There's some things you can only act so long on. And then the truth will come out. Well, a lot of this message today is about truth. But they were offered these foods, and they refused the foods. I think you know most of the story, but they said, we're not going to eat those foods. We're not going to eat from the king's table because that would defile us. This was the young men were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, and their names were changed. It's going to make sense in a few minutes. Their names were changed because they were into captivity, so they got new names. So they called them, instead of Daniel, it was Belteshazzar. Instead of Hananiah, it was Shadrach. Instead of Mishael, it was Meshach. Instead of Azariah, it was Abednego. So you know the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, the three Hebrew boys thrown into the fiery furnace. You remember that story now? Okay. But they refused the king's food. So let's look at verse 17 to 21. It says this: as for these four youths, God gave them knowledge and skill in all learning and wisdom. And Daniel had understanding in all kinds of visions and dreams. Now, and it was coming from God. Now at the end of the time which the king had set for bringing all the young men in, the chief of the eunuchs brought them before Nebuchadnezzar, and the king conversed with them, and among them all none was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah. Remember, none. You could also say none was found like Belteshazzar, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, okay? Whichever name you want to call them by. Therefore, they were assigned to stand before the king. Just a side note, do you know what your job is right now? To stand before the king. Ephesians, when we get to Ephesians, it'll make sense. To stand. That was their job then, a different king. And in all matters of wisdom and understanding concerning which the king asked them, he found them 10 times better than all the learned magicians and enchanters who were in his whole realm. Can you imagine thinking that you've got a staff of people, and all of a sudden you capture these people and pull out of them the best of the best, and those people are 10 times better than the people you got around you that you just thought were something? Pretty powerful. And Daniel continued there to the first year of King Cyrus at the close of the 70 years exile of Judah in Babylonia, which Jeremiah had foretold. So a lot's going on right there, so let's check out Chapter 2. King Nebuchadnezzar had a dream and was so bothered by it, he couldn't sleep anymore. It dug at him. He needed to know what the interpretation of the dream was. The dream disturbed him so much that he needed the interpretation of that dream. He gathered his wisest counsel around him, and he told them this. He was so bothered by the dream, he threw them the biggest curveball at all. He said, "You wise men, you're so wise, you're so wise. Tell me the dream I had and the interpretation of it." They said, Oh, king, okay, look here. You tell us the dream and we'll give you the interpretation." He said, "No." He said, "If I do that, you will devise a story knowing the first part of the dream, and you'll give me some stuff that sounds good, but I have to know that you know what you're talking about, because I know what the dream was. And you've got to tell me not only the interpretation," that's the easy part, "you got to tell me the dream. You'll never get to step two unless you tell me what step one is." Can I tell you, all the fakers got nervous? That's everybody, because he said, here's the punishment with it too. "If you don't do it, I'm going to have you cut up in pieces. And on top of your houses, I will pile up a dunghill." Look up the Hebrew if you need to on that one. "But it won't matter, because you'll be in pieces. You'll be dead. I will lay to waste what used to be you. And we won't think of you anymore, unless perhaps we're going to clean out that." The pressure was on. And they knew they couldn't do it, and they were trying to strike a deal. "But if you'll just tell us what the dream is, king, we're wise men." And he said, "No." So the order was given to gather all of them up and to put them away. And then when they got near Daniel, they were going to grab up Daniel too, because he was included in the group. And Daniel said, wait a second. Don't kill those guys yet." The wisdom of Daniel. "Don't kill those guys yet. God's not through getting glory out of this whole shebang yet. Don't kill these guys yet. But give me a minute. Give me a day to go consult my God and pray. And he'll give me the interpretation. He'll give me the dream and the interpretation." Everybody's like, "Yes, yes, send Daniel, him. Last chance." When it's last chance, you get desperate too. And it was the last chance, and they got desperate too. So they sent Daniel away to pray. Daniel went and told his three friends, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah. He said, "Guys, this is what's going on. So you guys pray for me that God gives me the dream and then I get the interpretation." So they were all hunkered down and praying. And sure enough, during the night, God gave Daniel the vision of what it was. And he knew. And he came out of there and said, take me to the king. I know what the dream is, and I know what the interpretation of it is. And don't kill anybody. So let's read chapter 2, verse 31 through 49. You, O king, saw and behold. Here he comes with the interpretation, with the dream. You saw and behold, there was a great image. This image was mighty and of exceedingly great brightness. And it stood before you, and the appearance of it was frightening and terrible. As for this image, its head was of fine gold, its breast and its arms of silver, its belly and its thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and partly of clay, the baked clay of the potter. As you looked, a stone was cut out without human hands, which smote the image on its feet of iron and baked clay and of the potter and broke them to pieces. Then the iron, the baked clay of the potter, the bronze, the silver, and the gold were broken and crushed together and became like chaff of the summer threshing floors. And the wind carried them away so that not a trace of them could be found. And the stone that smote the image became a great mountain or rock and filled the whole earth. This was the dream, and we will tell the interpretation of it to the king. So it was all on the line now. Like, he didn't say, did I get it right? He said, here's the dream. Fully confident, he nailed the dream, and he did. And he said, here's the dream. I just told it to you. And here comes the interpretation. I love that he didn't say, don't kill us. Did we get it right? Did we get everything right? Was it what? He said, no, that was your dream. And here comes your interpretation. Can you imagine what the king was doing? This was the dream. And we will tell you the interpretation of it. You, O king, are king of the earthly kings. Love it. Just continuing on with the truth. You're king of the earthly kings, to whom the God of heaven has given the wisdom, the power, the might, and the glory. And wherever the children of men dwell, and the beasts of the field, and the birds of the heavens, he has given them into your hand and has made you to rule over them all. You, king of Babylon, are the head of gold. And after you shall arise another kingdom. Here comes the big prophecy. The Medo-Persian kingdom, inferior to you, and still a third kingdom of bronze, Greece under Alexander the Great, which shall bear rule over all the earth. And the fourth kingdom, Rome, shall be strong as iron, since iron breaks to pieces and subdues all things. It shall break and crush all these. And as you saw the feet and toes, partly of baked clay, of the potter, partly of iron, it shall be divided a kingdom, and there shall be in it some of the firmness and strength of iron, just as you saw the iron mixed with miry earth and clay. And as the toes of the feet were partly of iron and partly of baked clay of the potter, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly brittle and broken. And as you saw the iron mixed with miry and earth and clay, so they shall mingle themselves in the seed of men in marriage bonds, but they will not hold together, for two such elements or ideologies can never harmonize, even as iron does not mingle itself with clay. And in the days of these final 10 kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, nor shall its sovereignty be left to another people, but it shall break and crush and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. Just as you saw the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that it broke in pieces, the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, and the gold, the great God has made known to the king what shall come to pass hereafter. The dream is certain, and the interpretation of it is sure. Then the king Nebuchadnezzar fell on his face and paid homage to Daniel as a great prophet of the highest God, and ordered that an offering And incense should be offered up to him in honor of his God. The king answered Daniel, of a truth, your God is the God of gods and the Lord of kings and the revealer of secret mysteries, seeing that you could reveal this secret mystery. Then the king made Daniel great and gave him many great gifts, and he made him to rule over the whole province of Babylon and to be chief governor over all the wise men of Babylon. And Daniel requested of the king, and he appointed Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon. But Daniel remained in the gate of the king at the king's court. Very interesting change of power right there. Everybody who would have been killed, according to the king, heard Daniel say, don't let them die. It wasn't that they didn't agree. Daniel had just been put into a whole different culture. But Daniel knew that God was going to use him. And also, if he did not have those men killed, all of them would know Daniel's the real thing. Because we had our chance. And we couldn't do it. We couldn't show up. We didn't have what it takes. We could have come up was something that the king might have believed if he would have given us the dream. But we know we didn't have the dream, so we know we didn't have the interpretation. But we all saw Daniel, and we know that his God gave Daniel the dream and then gave Daniel the ability to interpret it. And the king said yes to it. We are going to do anything you say, Daniel. You see the wisdom of that. That's an amazing thing. God gave so much power into Daniel's hands. Now, the king builds this giant golden image, and he sent out a decree in verses 4 through 18. But I always wondered how he could build this golden image. He built this golden image that, to me, it must have been a whole lot like what he dreamed about, right? And the first part of that interpretation is that it's going to take you off your throne, Nebuchadnezzar. So why in the world would you ever bring something to life or an image that looks like the thing that's going to take you down? Do you know that you're building something too? Do you know that you've received warning about what to build and what not to build in your life? Do you know that we're guilty of not following a king that we've already got, but building up our own kingdoms, building up our own images, turning our back on him and worshiping the things that we want to worship, the things that agree with us, the things that don't call us into order, the things that don't tell us what we need to do? And we look, like I did, at Nebuchadnezzar, as to what are you doing, except for I've done the same thing, and so have you. I call it the human condition. I call it our inability to take the truth of the Word of God and not apply it to our lives, and we're all guilty of it. But there's hope today, right now, if we will begin to take His Word and the truth of His Word. Well, that, like I said the first time, if we'll take His Word, because there's no lie in it at all. I'm not tricking you this morning. If we'll just take His Word, we'll get the truth. See, we want God's promises, don't we? God's promises are really good, y'all. We want His promises. Oh, yeah, you've had some of them, hey. We want His promises. We want His benefits. But let me tell you this. If you get His presence, you get His promises. Don't let me lose you this morning. I'm not trying to be mean and slap you around from the pulpit, but we got to get our eyes open to some things, because there are some tricks in place right now. And we got to see the tricks, and we got to realize we got to beat this thing, and I'm not smart enough to beat it on my own, and neither are you. I'm not trying to be mean. I'm being factual and truthful. None of us have the ability in ourselves to beat or even stand against what's coming down to us in the near future. But through God, we can have, and this, I know it sounds cliche, but it is the truth. In God, we can stand, and in God, we're already victorious. It's a picture of human desire and the lust for power that drives men beyond reason. It would not be reasonable for me to build an image like that, and that thing is going to turn around and crush me. That's the enemy's plan. It's to bless you, or for you to perceive something as blessing, because all it's got to do is look like a blessing to you, and if you're not very careful, you'll start worshiping it. Get stuff. Get stuff. It's real easy to get stuff these days. I was telling, we got Steve and Stephanie Fullerton, our just closest friends possible, sitting right here from Arizona. We're having a conversation. They've been with us all week. They were with us in Kenzie's beginning, and they were with us right when Kenzie went to be with the Lord. They've always been there through the years. And I was telling Steve about a pair of boots that I got. They're expensive boots. They're my hunting boots. I mean, they ain't cheap, y'all. But I got to get 200 and something pounds back from where I went to in the woods, and these are the boots that'll help me do it. But they were so big, so expensive. When I first saw them, the price tag was so high. I went to eBay. And I bought a pair, and they were still, they on eBay, they were as expensive used as the normal boots that I buy. And I needed to upgrade, but I couldn't go full upgrade until I knew. And I went and bought those boots on eBay. I wore them a whole season of deer and turkey hunting. And at the end, they were so good to me. I said, I'm going to get the new pair. I put them back on eBay and sold them for more than I paid for them. Don't tell me God won't give you wisdom. Chapter 3, verse 4 through 18. Let me look real quick. See if I can summarize this real quick. So there's a herald for King Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar built the big golden image, and he told the herald to say this. That's what a herald does. A herald repeats and sounds just like the king. He would fool you if you didn't see him. You would think it was the king. He was able to do it so well. And it's like Walker in his interpretations. You'd think it was the guy. Then the herald cried aloud, "You are commanded, O people, nations, and language, that when you hear the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, dulcimer, bagpipe, every kind of music, you are to fall down and worship the king, the golden image that the king Nebuchadnezzar has set up. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall at that very hour be cast into the midst of a burning, fiery furnace." Y'all know enough about that story for me to just leave it right there and save a few verses, okay? Because I want to hit this. I don't know what all those instruments are, but I know that they were the music of the day. And I know that Babylon was light years ahead of Judah. So Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, Daniel, they were brought into this culture. And it progressed to this. I mean, all of a sudden, they're stolen from where they were. Their parents are probably killed. They were royalty. They had certain life that they were used to. But here they go. And all of a sudden, they're in the presence of another kingdom. And this kingdom is not like the kingdom that they came out of. This kingdom is light years ahead of what they're able to do. And the music is light years past what they had. And they said this, when you hear the music playing, you're to immediately prostrate yourself and start to worship. Do you know, just as a side note, in the music world today, the enemy has the best music, has the most gifted artists, I'm blown away. I know I'm like you are too. I listen to some stuff. I get carried away. And I think of the lifestyle of the artist. And I'm like, how my heart breaks. I'm like, how could you live that lifestyle out? And God's the one that gave you that talent. And you're living that thing out. And with that music, that music, it can move me. It can get me. It can shift your mind. Music does. You know, music has the power to do that. And you've got a power to play a part in that. You know, when you're feeling good, when I play, I know y'all can't believe I played basketball in high school, but I did. But I love the pregame. We had a pregame song, and we came out to that song. And it was old Earth, Wind, and Fire, Let's Groove Tonight. I know y'all heard White Boys Can't Jump, but this one, when they played them songs, I could go. And it just moved me. Let's groove tonight. But it's that whole thing that moves you. It also works when you're sad. You don't put on Let's Groove Tonight. You put on a different kind of song, a mood song that kind of soothes you where you're at. If you want to be romantic with your spouse, you put on a different type of music. You might even, guys, I know we're tough and all, but we might even put on some Tchaikovsky or something. If we have to, gotta do what you gotta do, right? If your dog gets hit by a car, you put on a country song, because every dog gets killed in a country song, right? But do we examine the music that's played? Because you'll bow to it. You'll bow to it. Oh, yes, you will. I'm speaking from experience. I wish I could tell you that everything I sang and played during the week was something off the worship set. It's not. But music has a power. And when they heard the music, they had to bow down. That's just on the side. That's why I didn't read all that, so I bought that time right there. Let's go back to Daniel chapter 1, verse 1 and 2, because this is when it gets very interesting. And I'm watching the clock. I'm about 25 minutes in right now. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, the king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with part of the vessels of the house of God. Now, this is just so interesting. It's so full that I got pages on just these two sentences right here. Because it says that Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and he besieged it. And it says that the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand. What a way to start a book off. What a way to start a book off to say, my home country got defeated. Not just did it get defeated. The Lord gave my country into the hand of someone else. Because here's what we do. We only equate the goodness of God or the will of God when good things happen in our life. And we do that. But Daniel starts off a book and says, the worst thing that could have happened, I was pulled from my family. They were probably killed. I don't know, unless he saw it. I was thrust into a culture that I knew nothing about. They spoke a language I did not know. Expectations were put on me. I could have never imagined that I was royalty and this would happen, but the Lord did this. I don't hear that kind of comment coming out of us Only when something very good happens do we say the Lord did it. Because that makes sense. It does not make sense. Let something bad happen and people who have, even people that I expect it from the world, but it's slipped its way into the church, that people who trust God until something bad happens, then this comes out of them. I can't believe God let that happen. If he were a loving God, how in the world could that happen, right? You've heard it too, right? That's human nature. Daniel was able to get past all of that and say, the Lord let this happen. And he was not blaming God. His life was going to prove that that was a huge step of maturity in his life, that he was able to go through that and step out of it and say, that, all that bad, was the Lord. Do you understand the freedom of that? That it took that to get me here. Now, the truth of it is, if we knew that getting to here was going to take all that, we probably would reject it right here and run the other way and grab what we could and hope for the best. That's why we redeem things that have happened. And that's why by faith we understand it wasn't the decision that I would have made, but I'm going to trust that I'm going to go through this, and I'm going to continue on, and certainly God will get me to the other side. Amen. Because what would have been much better for us would have been for, instead of, the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah. Now, here's a book that we could write. The Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand. It would be so much better for us to say, the Lord gave Judah Babylon. The Lord gave Babylon into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar. Why would that be so awesome? Because you got to understand, Jerusalem and Judah was this little bitty country. Little bitty country. Babylon was this great, big, advanced country. Now, science would tell you that this is a great example of Darwinism, is all this is. It's when the big is going and consuming and little comes along as a block. He just crunches it up and keeps on going. And they would say that's a great example of Darwinism. And it would be great for us if we could have just given an alternate turnaround and said, instead of this great nation conquering our little nation and moving on, it'd be a better story if we'd have said, God, by his power, took this little bitty nation and he turned it around and he ate this, rolled over this big nation. Wouldn't that be like, man, Daniel's my favorite book in the Bible. Man, you know, we did that with David and Goliath, right? We got that story out of David and Goliath, but here's a different story. It's like the antithesis of that. The great swallowed God's little. And Daniel said, that was the Lord. Hang on a minute. There ain't no way. Unless y'all brought some loaves and fishes, ain't no way we're going to get to the end of this today. And it's all right. It's an easy admission for us. It's not even a leap for us when God, who is God, does something for us that's so incredible and it's good. And it's not that hard, especially in this setting, to say, man, that was God. And everybody else go, amen, yeah, that was God. Look at him go. It's not the same admission when a defeat comes And something inside of you knows that God just made a choice that you didn't agree on. And he didn't even ask you if it was okay. But because he was still God, he went on with it. That's happened in your life. I don't have to ask if it has. And some of you are probably going through that right now. But I can tell you this. If God allows it to happen, there's purpose in it. To run the risk of being cliche-ish, I'm gonna move along. And I can break this down later. But I can tell you that something else happened in this sentence, and it really just, if you think what's happened so far in these sentences is big, it really gets blown out of control. Because it says this, and the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, and something else happened. Along with the vessels of the house of God. The Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with a part of the vessels of the house of God. What does it mean? Why didn't Daniel just say he? When they came in, they took me. They took me. They took my horses. They took my chariots. They took my home. They took my belongings. They took my position. All you know is they got Daniel. And they swang by the little temple of Judah and collected some of the pots and pans and took them back and put those into the treasury of their gods. Into the treasury of their gods. Now look, Babylon is known to have had over 1,100 temples. And what would happen is whenever Babylon would roll over somebody, they would take the spoils. And the spoils that are listed right here are some of the items of the house of God. And he took those items and he brought them back, and they had a museum that they would put them in. And they would be on display. And they would be trophies to the king. And as he told his stories of his victories, it would include, yeah, I took on Judah and I beat them. And nobody would be that surprised about it. And I took their pots and pans out of their temple and I put them over here with mine. Well, can I tell you, there's something that happens with that. And it's happened ever since that time. And it's happening right now. And if it's not careful, we'll just sit around and watch it happen. Daniel's pulled out of what he knew. And he set into a new culture. And a new culture looked nothing like the culture he came out of. But you and I have sat right here. And the culture that we're in now is not like the culture that we were in 20 years ago. 30 years ago, 40 years ago, 50 years ago. It's nothing like it at all. But the result is the same. We find ourselves in a culture that has made demands on us, and we're either going to line up with the demands or we're going to be swallowed up by them. And we've got a choice to make right now. Daniel proved that he had already made that choice. And he would not let the culture change him. Daniel was stolen and thrust into a culture and said, "You'll go by this." We weren't thrust into a culture. We sat here. Our culture changed little by little by little. And now we feel the swallow of it all around us now. Now we can't say anything. I can't have a conversation with you and say anything about anybody of color unless they're there. And I have to be careful what I have to say to you. Or you, am I just telling y'all how? Here, let me come back here. I have to be careful when I talk to Walker about his friends. Or do I? Or do I just trust that the relationship is everything that it's supposed to be? Darlene, Matt, when you go someplace for the first time, would it be fair to say that when you walk into a room, people look at you just like when Christine and I and Logan and Michaela go into the room? They look exactly the same. You could not tell the difference. Or would I be wrong? Jeremiah, John Wayne, John, when you carry your family into a restaurant, is it exactly the same, you reckon, as when I carry my family? You see what I'm talking about? Anybody get a little tense even with my little conversation right there? Yeah, you did. Well, these folks know that I love them. But the truth is this. I got y'all's attention right now. You're like, what's he going to say next? Here's where we are. And we've got to decide how we're going to navigate this. But we don't have to navigate it. Navigating it would mean I have to walk into here and let me take a temperature of the room and continually, the door opened up. Who is it? Oh, it's the family that has black people and white people in it. They came today. Oh, I got to adjust the sermon. Oh, John Kelly and Deanna, they're not here today. I can just the white people. There's Gene. Oh, there's Gene. Oh, what am I going to say? There's Michelle. That's what I got to do if I'm going to negotiate. And these are believers. These are family of God. These are made in His image. And what happens if somebody else that's very strange or a very different lifestyle comes in here? What am I going to do? What's socially acceptable? You think? You know what the word says is what y'all sang. And when y'all started singing, it tears came to my eyes when I was playing the bass over there. Stand. Just stand. Stand. Can I tell you the power of standing? Because here, let me explain this. This is what, I don't want to leave you hanging on this. This is what the culture wants to do. It wants to silence you. Have you figured that one out yet? It wants you to be quiet. It wants you to shut up unless you agree with what it says. The culture has changed so much. It's changed the definition of a family. It's changed what used to be the union of a man and a woman to, oh, make room for me, a man and a man, or a woman and a woman. We want it too. We don't want no civil union. Okay, you're making a little room. That's not what I want. I want marriage. I want it to say marriage. Y'all uncomfortable yet? See, being silent is what gets us uncomfortable. Divorce, divorce, divorce. I heard somebody that was telling me this week about a divorce that happened like hundreds of years ago. Well, let's go all the way back to Jesus. Joseph decided to put his wife away privately. And there's all kinds of debate. Were they actually married yet? She was at least betrothed to be married. And for him to put her away would be the same exact thing as to divorce Mary. So it was a term from way back then. It was so uncommon that it said he didn't want to shame her, that he would have done it privately. Joseph would have put Mary, the mother of Jesus, away privately. He could have gotten by with it until the revelation came to her. No, Joseph. No, this is bigger than you. Hang on. Right? It went from being that much of a thing to being what divorce is today. My wife bumped me yesterday going down the interstate. And if you've gone northbound, right out here on the interstate, right along in here, it says something like this. Life is short. Get a divorce. The shame is gone. You're wasting your time. She is holding you back. They need you at the club. That's the culture we live in. That's gone. Homosexuality. You find a preacher that's gay and he'll preach to you. You ain't gonna find him here. Thank you, brother. I told you. Here we go. I told y'all not too long ago when I was explaining what the term gay actually meant. It meant happy. I said this. I've been a gay man lots of times in my life. And Billy said, please, I get what you're saying. Please don't take that pause like you took. I've been a gay man lots of times, but I've never been a homosexual. And here's the whole thing that they're wanting to do. By taking the pots and pans, you took something that was holy and separated unto God. Something that by definition was an absolute connection to a holy God. So it had an absolute on it. And when he took that and he moved that to the treasury of his God, what he was saying is, I'll take the absolute and I'll make it relative. I'll just bring it down. It's just pots and pans, y'all. That God that they thought was something, and he gave them specific instructions about those pots and pans. I just took them. I took them. When I rolled over them, I went by their temple. I got their pots and their pans. And I brought them back and I put them in my temple. And they're mine because they're just pots and pans. They're not holy. I touched them. Nothing happened. But he took something holy and he made it relative. I can imagine Daniel took Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego with him and said, come on, boys, let me show you something. And he goes by the museum. He said, that stuff right there, that belongs to our God. And our God has a record of it. And we will see victory come back to us. And I'm in a position to be used by God. And God put me there. And when he allowed this to happen, it was not a tragedy. It was a rescue. And God did this thing. And hang on. And we're going to see what else he's going to do. So they blow the horn. They play the music. Everybody else bows down. Daniel is away serving the king in his court, but Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are right there. And the Chaldeans saw it, that they didn't bow down, and they were waiting on their chance, and they went back and reported it. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego did not bow down, and it made the king mad, and he sent for them and brought them up, and he gave them one more chance, and he said, I'm going to play the music one more time, and you can bow down. And if you don't, I'm going to bind you up into the fire. But I believe a conversation might have already taken place. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, between their families. Can you imagine having a salary? Well, just imagine yours. Imagine your salary. Imagine what you make. Everything's rolling good. You've got yourself so secure. You're in such a good shape. You're in such a good place. Ain't ever been this good before. All you got to do is just chill. You already know who God is. And you can even just, when they play that music, you can bow down if you need to. But you don't have to. And he said, don't. So somebody's got a choice to make. Can you imagine the conversation? Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego go home and they talk to their families. And they say, look, all we got to do is when the music plays, bow down. We'll keep salary, keep everything will be good. God will still be on our side. And the wife said, what are you going to do? He said, we ain't going to do it. We ain't going to do it. We ain't going to bow down. Then they're going to throw you into the fire. What about us? We are not going to bow down. God is able to do this thing. Go to 16. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Chapter 3. Answered the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, it is not necessary for us to answer you on this point. That's enough right there to pin the king's ears back. It's not necessary for us to answer you on this point. If our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if not, let it be known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image which you have set up. Then Nebuchadnezzar was full of fury, and his facial expression was changed to antagonism against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Therefore, he commanded that the furnace should be heated 7 times hotter than it was usually heated, and he threw them in. And when he looked back at it, he said, we bound them in their clothes and we threw them in there. And I know there was 3 of them, but I see 4. And one of them looks like the Son of God. That comes at another level of faith. And there is a level of faith that does not require your mouth to say a thing. Remember what he said. We don't even have to answer you in this. But just so you know, we know our God is able to do this. And even if he doesn't, we're still not going to bow. That level of faith, though, will require you to not need to say anything, but it will require you to do something. What you gonna do? Because the holy and the absolute are set. They are set. And the world's gonna try to make it relative, and it's already had great success doing. But I'm believing it's not come to your door yet. Because when it comes to your door, you are going to answer and say, I don't even have to answer you, but I know one thing. I'm not going to bow to you. I will not bow to you. And my God, who has everything, will deliver me out of your hand. If you're walking around in fear today, you do not have the complete understanding of who your God is. I've hacked this all to pieces, But I'm going to finish with this scripture, Ephesians 6. Let me tell y'all what you're getting for Christmas, because if you thought you were going to get a Christmas message, I'm going to give you a spoiler for what your present is. It's some more of Daniel. Merry Christmas. Ephesians 6:10 says this. I love the Amplified. Woof. The Amplified version of how I'm going to win. How do I not walk around in fear? Well, number one, I don't walk around. I stand. In conclusion, be strong in the Lord. In other words, I've told you all of these things. And in conclusion of that, let me end on this. Be strong in the Lord. Be empowered through the union with Him. Draw your strength from Him. That strength which He has, which His boundless might provides. Put on God's whole armor, the armor of a heavy-armed soldier which God supplies, that you may be able successfully to stand. Look up at your neighbor and say, stand. To stand up against all the strategies and the deceits of the devil, for we do not wrestle with flesh and blood, contending only with physical opponents, but against the despotisms, against the powers, against the master spirits who are, get that, against the master spirits who are the world rulers of this present darkness, against the spirit forces of wickedness in the heavenly supernatural sphere. Therefore, put on God's complete armor that you may be able to resist and stand your ground on the evil day of danger. And having done all the crisis demands, to stand firmly in your place. Stand therefore, hold your ground, having tightened the belt. Having tightened the belt. Having tightened the belt of truth around your loins, and having put on the breastplate of integrity and of moral rectitude and right standing with God. You've got your orders, and that is to stand. And then He gives you a piece of armor. And He says it's a belt, and you tighten it. The belt of truth around your loins. He goes on and He gives you other parts, but He starts with the belt of truth. Right? Doesn't it say that? Let me just tell you why. If you don't get past the belt of truth, it doesn't matter where you go from there, because it has to start with truth. It has to start with the absoluteness of truth. And that's been tried to shield, especially over your age. God knows if the Lord tarries what the enemy will pull for these. You young men are getting it. You're getting it. You're getting it. I know you are. Aren't you? Aren't you getting it? Getting it. Young men are smart. These are mighty, who said that? Mighty warriors. They're mighty warriors. Why? Because mom and dad deemed it important to pour into them. Jules, I've seen you change and grow in the last couple years. And you have a hunger for the Lord. I can go right on down to Malachi. When I saw you helping lead that worship, son, He's got His hand on you, Malachi. And you're the first. A lot of times the first has a hard time. You keep pushing. You keep holding on to God. Truth comes first. The absolute truth. Not the relative truth. Not the lie they want to give you. The absolute truth. And He said, take the truth and wear it like a belt around your waist. You recognize that belt, Steve-O? You do. I knew you would. Steve gave me that belt. Steve close to me. How often do we get to talk, Steve? Not very often. How quickly are we caught up when we see each other? Just. You need people in your life. You don't have to ride down the highway with and talk. You can just be quiet and knowing that they're right there. That's some of the people you need in your life. Sometimes you need people out of talk so you don't have to. It'd be a blessing to everybody. That belt means a lot to me. Steve was sitting in my living room a couple years ago. He said, John, I want you to check out these pants I got. These are cool pants. He wasn't lying. They're cool pants. K-U-H-L, cool. They're cool. That's a cool belt. He said, you like these pants? I said, they're cool. He said, you want them? I said, yep. He went and changed. He said, if they fit you, you can have them. Bit of a challenge. I sucked in. Ooh, I won. They mine. And he said, I got different colors. You want them? I said, I'll take them. He said, you like this belt? I said, I love the belt. I'll take it. I like belts. You see now that it's not as long. It's way longer here than it was when you gave it to me. Why? I lost a pound or two, yay for me. Cool. When I got it, it was right here. I ain't bragging, I'm telling you. When I got it, it was this. One, two, okay. It was one, two, and nothing right here. And I tolerated that, but I took me a little nail, and I made that hole because I like the belt. And it's time to go again. It's time to go at least one time, maybe two. Where did I get the belt? You remember all them clothes you brought to the church that day, all them suits? And said, I ain't wearing them suits no more. I'm wearing that. And there was a belt in them. And when y'all give me stuff, I reserve the right to go give it away or keep it for myself as an unto a blessing. And I can't tithe on that. I mean, come on now. You can't tithe on that. Come on. And I saw that belt, and I needed a belt. You didn't know it. I took the belt. I've never told you I kept the belt. And it's time to tighten the belt again. And the Bible says, take the belt of truth and put it around your waist. Put it around your loins. Science lesson. I've told you this before, but if you had never heard it, science lesson, your loins. It's the area in your body where two things happen, reproduction and elimination. You're welcome for the biology lesson. Reproduction and elimination. And he said this about the belt of truth. Put it around your waist where you reproduce and where you eliminate. And if you reproduce truth, you will eliminate waste. And if you reproduce waste, you will eliminate truth. And he said, put the truth on and cinch it down. And that is on you. And you can't put his truth down. You can't cinch His truth down by compromising with something that has been watered down. And the compromise culture that we live in right now, it's being compromised, and it will be in your house, and you will deal with it, and it will be in your children's house, and they will deal with it, and it will one day be in your children's children's house, and they will deal with it. And if you want to at least show them how, now's your time. Now's your opportunity. And I promise you, with every passing day, it's getting away from you, and it's getting further out of reach. And His instruction is not to chase it down. His instruction is to stand in it. Stand in it. Stand in it. Daniel, you showed us so much. Still so much more to learn from you. And that's enough for today.